please learn more about Freedomizer Radio by going to freedomizerradio.com and also Facebook us right at freedomizerradio.com. Catch you there.
Call in our live number at 319-527-6208. That's 319-527-6208. Press 1 to participate on the air.
Good afternoon and welcome to another exciting edition of Ancient of Days, where we are on the book of 2 Samuel and exploring and learning what happened between David and his son Absalom. Now, we are coming to you live on this 14th day of April, a Sunday afternoon from beautiful downtown Crestline in the San Bernardino Mountains of Southern California's Inland Empire. But before we begin, I'm going to treat you to a song by one of my friends and favorite musicians, Mahatma Randy and his wife. So here's a treat for you while I take a quick break. And we are back and ready to dive into this problem. Now, we learned in 2 Samuel chapters 11 and 12 that one of the sons of David had raped his half-sister and then kicked her out. And the sister, she was a Tamar. She was a full sister to David's son, Absalom. In other words, Absalom and Tamar had the same mother, and the other son, Amnon, had a different mother. Well, Absalom arranged to have Amnon killed, murdered. And then Absalom, fearing repercussions, fled. So in the end of chapter 13, we have starting with verse 37, but Absalom fled and went to Talmai, the son of Ammihud. Ammihud? Oh, well, king of Geshur. And David mourned for his son day after day. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there 3 years. And the spirit of the king longed to go out to Absalom, because he was comforted about Amnon since he was dead. In other words, David has lost two sons, Amnon, who is dead, and Absalom, who has fled. So now we're going to get into chapter 14. Now Joab, the son of Zeruiah, knew that the king's heart went out to Absalom. And Joab sent to Tekoa and brought from there a wise woman and said to her, "Pretend to be a mourner and put on mourning garments. Do not anoint yourself with oil, but behave like a woman who has been mourning many days for the dead. Go to the king and speak thus to him." So Joab put the words in her mouth. When the woman of Tekoa came to the king, she fell on her face to the ground and paid homage and said, "Save me, O king." And the king said to her, "What is your trouble?" She answered, "Alas, I am a widow. My husband is dead. And your servant had two sons. And they quarreled with one another in the field. There was no one to separate them, and one struck the other and killed him. And now the whole clan has risen against your servant, and they say, 'Give up the man who struck his brother, that we may put him to death for the life of his brother whom he killed.' And so they would destroy the heir also." That's H-E-I-R, heir, the inheritor. "Thus they would quench my coal that is left and leave to my husband neither name nor remnant on the face of the earth." So, this is interesting. It's obviously a parable. There's a better word than that. A metaphor for David's two sons. Verse 8. Then the king said to the woman, "Go to your house, and I will give orders concerning you." Sorry about that. I suddenly got a cough out of nowhere. Verse 9. And the woman of Tekoa said to the king, "On me be the guilt, my lord the king, and on your father's house, king and his throne be guiltless." The king said, now the king is David, of course. He said, "If anyone says anything to you, bring him to me, and he shall never touch you again." Then she said, "Please let the king invoke the Lord your God, that the avenger of blood kill no more, and my son be not destroyed." He said, "As the Lord lives, not one hair of your son shall fall to the ground." Then the woman said, "Please let your servant speak a word to my lord the king." He said, "Speak." And the woman said, "Why then have you planned such a thing against the people of God? For in giving this decision, the king convicts himself, inasmuch as the king does not bring his banished one home again. We must all die. We are like water spilled on the ground, which cannot be gathered up again. But God will not take away life, and he devises means so that the banished one will not remain an outcast. Now I have come to say this to my Lord the King, because the people have made me afraid, and your servant thought, I will speak to the king. It may be that the king will perform this request of his servant. For the king will hear and deliver his servant from the hand of the man who would destroy me and my son together from the heritage of God. And your servant thought, the word of my lord the king will set me at rest. For my lord the king is like the angel of God to discern good and evil. The Lord your God be with you. Oh, David's in a trap here. Verse 18, then the king answered the woman, do not hide from me anything I ask you. And the woman said, let my lord the king speak. The king said, is the hand of Joab with you in all this? The woman answered and said, as surely as you live, my lord the king, one cannot turn to the right hand or to the left from anything that my lord the king has said. It was your servant Joab who commanded me. It was he who put all these words in the mouth of your servant. In order to change the course of things, your servant Joab did this. But my Lord has wisdom like the wisdom of the angel of God to know all things that are on the earth. Then the king said to Joab, behold, now I grant this. Go bring back the young man Absalom. And Joab fell on his face to the ground and paid homage and blessed the king. And Joab said, today your servant knows that I have found favor in your sight, my lord the king, in that the king has granted the request of his servant. So Joab arose and went to Geshur and brought Absalom to Jerusalem. And the king said, let him dwell apart in his own house. He is not to come into my presence. So Absalom lived apart in his own house and did not come into the king's presence. Now, this is just the beginning of the trouble between Absalom and his father, King David. But it shows that Absalom had good reason to resent his father. His half-brother Amnon had disgraced his sister in the worst way possible in their culture. She could never marry because she had been raped. She had to live with her brother Absalom, and if he had not taken her in, she would be on the street and forced to beg or engage in prostitution. And she was a princess, the daughter of King David. So Absalom simply took revenge for what Amnon had done to his sister. Now, in their culture, that meant death. It wouldn't be the same today. It would be prison. But they did then. But David does not want to see Absalom's face. Verse 25. Now in all Israel, there was no one so much to be praised for his handsome appearance as Absalom. From the sole of his foot to the crown of his head, there was no blemish in him. And when he cut the hair of his head, for at the end of every year he used to cut it, and when it was heavy on him, he cut it. He weighed the hair of his head 200 shekels by the king's weight. There were born to Absalom 3 sons and 1 daughter whose name was Tamar. She was a beautiful woman. Now, this might remind you of King Saul, the first king of Israel, the one who hated David and tried to kill him. Saul was handsome. I don't know about his hair, but he was handsome. It's a parallel. Verse 28. So Absalom lived 2 full years in Jerusalem without coming into the king's presence. Then Absalom sent for Joab to send him to the king, but Joab would not come to him. He sent a second time, but Joab would not come. Then he said to his servants, "See, Joab's field is next to mine, and he has barley there. Go and set it on fire." So Absalom's servants set the field on fire. Well, that's a mean thing to do. Going on here. Absalom has quite the temper, and just as he had others kill Amnon on his behalf, he's having others set the field on fire on his behalf. Verse 31. Then Joab arose and went to Absalom at his house and said to him, "Why have your servants set my field on fire?" Absalom answered Joab, "Behold, I sent word to you. Come here that I may send you to the king to ask, 'Why have I come from Geshur? G-E-S-H-U-R, Geshur. It would be better for me to be there still. Now therefore let me go into the presence of the king, and if there is guilt in me, let him put me to death." Then Joab went to the king and told him, and he summoned Absalom. So he came to the king and bowed himself on his face to the ground before the king, and the king kissed Absalom. So that ends chapter 14. And David kisses his son. He allows him to come into his presence after 2 years. But Absalom is unhappy with his lot in life. I don't know what he expects after what he's done, but okay. I mean, just because he had a right to punish his brother Amnon doesn't mean that Absalom does not deserve punishment. He has blood on his hands, the death of Amnon. And he didn't even do it himself. He had his servants do it. Okay. Now, I have dropped a link to the chapter 14 of 2 Samuel in the chat room powered by QuickChat at freedomizerradio.com. This is a really great story. And, of course, William Faulkner used it for the title of his novel, Absalom, Absalom. That's Absalom, comma, Absalom, exclamation point. I'm going to put the link to my blog in the chat room, powered by Quick Chat. My blog is about my late ex-husband, Philip K. Dick, and about my writing, my books, which you can find just about anywhere, but mostly on Amazon, because Barnes & Noble sells my books, but I haven't received any money from them. Here we go. I think I posted it. The chat room is super slow today. All right. Absalom. Remember that name. It's a name for a traitor. a man with a quick temper and little common sense. Chapter 15. After this, Absalom got himself a chariot and horses and 50 men to run before him. And Absalom used to rise early and stand beside the way of the gate. And when any man had a dispute to come before the king for judgment, Absalom would call to him and say, "From what city are you?" And when he said, "Your servant is of such and such a tribe in Israel," Absalom would say to him, "See, your claims are good and right, but there is no man designated by the king to hear you." Then Absalom would say, "Oh, that I were judge in the land. Then every man with a dispute or cause might come to me, and I would give him justice." So here, folks, Absalom is outright lying. David has been judging disputes himself in person, as we saw when Joab sent the wise woman to talk to David. Verse 8, "And whenever a man came near to pay homage to him, he would put out his hand and take hold of him and kiss him." Thus Absalom did to all of Israel who came to the king for judgment. So Absalom stole the hearts of the men of Israel. And at the end of 4 years, Absalom said to the king, "Please let me go and pay my vow, for I have vowed to the Lord in Hebron. For your servant vowed a vow while I lived at Geshur in Aram, saying, 'If the Lord will indeed bring me back to Jerusalem, then I will offer worship to the Lord.'" Now listen, he's been back 6 years, and it just comes up now? And David doesn't suspect any deception? Verse 9, "The king said to him, 'Go in peace.' So he arose and went to Hebron. But Absalom sent secret messengers throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, 'As soon as you hear the sound of the trumpet, then say Absalom is king at Hebron.' With Absalom went 200 men from Jerusalem who were invited guests, and they went in their innocence and knew nothing. And while Absalom was offering the sacrifices, he sent for Ahithophel the Gilonite, David's counselor, from his city Gilo." Or maybe it's like Shiloh, but it starts with a G instead of an SH. G-I-L-O-H, Gilo. "And the conspiracy grew strong, and the people with Absalom kept increasing. And a messenger came to David, saying, 'The hearts of the men of Israel have gone after Absalom.' Then David said to all his servants who were with him at Jerusalem, 'Arise and let us flee, or else there will be no escape for us from Absalom. Go quickly, lest he overtake us quickly and bring down ruin on us and strike the city with the edge of the sword.' And the king's servants said to the king, 'Behold, your servants are ready to do whatever my lord the king decides.' So the king went out and all his household after him. And the king left 10 concubines to keep the house. And the king went out and all the people after him, and they halted at the last house. And all his servants passed by him, and all the Cherethites and all the Pelethites and all the 600 Gittites who had followed him from Gath passed on before the king. Then the king said to Ittai the Gittite, 'Why do you also go with us? Go back and stay with the king, for you are a foreigner and also an exile from your home. That day with which king? I'm confused. Well, I don't see an explanation here, so let's grab my study Bible and see what it says. Dum-de-dum. Dum-de-dum-de-dum. All right. Where'd I put the study Bible, guys? It's one of those days when I don't know where anything is. Here it is. It's just on the left of the desk instead of on the right. Ooh, cookies. I got cookies. Uh-huh. Okay. 2 Samuel. Chapter 15. Turning little thin pages. Come on. Split apart pages. 13. 14, 15, and verses 24 to, and 20, nope, that, my page scrolled down. Verses 10 through 20. Gotta turn one more page. Of course, it doesn't want to come apart. Thin as onion skin. Here we go. No explanation. Well, we'll just assume that he wants these foreigners to stay with their king. So, starting with verse 19, then the king said to Ittai the Gittite, why do you also go with us? Go back and stay with the king. Maybe he means stay in the palace. Who knows? The king's house? Go back and stay with the king, for you are a foreigner and also an exile from your home. You came only yesterday. And shall I today make you wander about with us, since I go to I know not where? Go back and take your brothers with you, and may the Lord show steadfast love and faithfulness to you. But Ittai answered the king, as the Lord lives, and as my lord the king lives, wherever my lord the king shall be, whether for death or for life, there also will your servant be. And David said to Ittai, go then, pass on. So Ittai the Gittite passed on with all his men and all the little ones who were with him. And all the land wept aloud as all the people passed by. And the king crossed the brook Kidron, and all the people passed on toward the wilderness. And Abiathar came up, and behold, Zadok came also with all the Levites, bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God. And they set down the Ark of God until the people had all passed out of the city. So, wow, the priests are going with him too, and carrying the Ark. Verse 25. Then the king said to Zadok, carry the Ark of God back into the city. If I find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me back and let me see both it and his dwelling place. But if he says, I have no pleasure in you, behold, here I am, and let him do to me what seems good to him. The king also said to Zadok the priest, are you not a seer to the city in peace with your two sons, Ahimaaz your son, and Jonathan the son of Abiathar? See, I will wait at the fords of the wilderness until the word comes from you to inform me. So Zadok and Abiathar carried the Ark of God back to Jerusalem, and they remained there. Come on, evil computer. But David went up the ascent of the Mount of Olives, weeping as he went, barefoot and with his head covered. And all the people who were with him covered their heads, and they went up, weeping as they went. And it was told David, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, please turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. Now they're at the Mount of Olives. Let's see where that is. Is it in the wilderness, as it seems to suggest? Also known as Mount Olivet, the Mount of Olives is a mountain ridge east of and adjacent to Jerusalem's old city. It is named for the olive groves that once covered its slopes. So it's right next to old Jerusalem. It isn't far into the wilderness. By the way, the Garden of Gethsemane, where Jesus prayed and ardently prayed and wept tears of blood on the night before his, well, the night of his arrest, right before his crucifixion. It's on the Mount of Olives. Two, while David was coming to the summit where God was worshipped, behold, Hushai the Archite came to meet him with his coat torn and dirt on his head. David said to him, if you go on with me, you will be a burden to me. But if you return to the city and say to Absalom, I will be your servant, O king, as I have been your father's servant in time past, so now I will be your servant. Then you will defeat for me the counsel of Ahithophel. Are not Zadok and Abiathar the priests with you there? So whatever you hear from the king's house, tell it to Zadok and Abiathar the priests. Behold, their two sons are with them there, Ahimaaz, Zadok's son, and Jonathan, Abiathar's son, and by them you shall send to me everything you hear. So Hushai, David's friend, came into the city just as Absalom was entering Jerusalem. So here, David, who has been deceived, is using deception to turn the tables on the rebel Absalom. And on that note, folks, we'll take our first commercial break. And don't go away, we will be back.
Did you know that every time you swipe your debit card, those behind-the-scenes transaction fees make the big banks even richer? In 2016 alone, these fees added up to $60 billion. Yes, that's billion with a B. Well, what if there was a way to have the convenience of a debit card, but reroute those fees from the banksters to organizations actually doing good in the world? Organizations that protect the environment or feed hungry children? What if your swipes could literally change the world? Well, Groundswell SPC has found a way to do just that. We've designed a Visa debit card program that shares transaction fees with your favorite cause. Groundswell partners with nonprofit organizations that promote the card to their supporters. Their supporters then use the card to power the mission of the nonprofit. It's a win-win-win for everyone, except the big banks, of course. Groundswell is about to launch its first cards into market, and we're inviting you to be part of this movement as an investor in the company. Go to wefunder.com/groundswellcard to learn more. Set up a free WeFunder account and invest in Groundswell today and get your money on mission.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to talk to you about our newest sponsor, Misty'sGardens.com. Now, this is a contraption where you can grow food in your apartment, in a small patio, or if you're like me and you absolutely suck at gardening, this makes life a lot easier. It is a vertical tower garden. We can grow over 20 things at once in a small, compacted area. Good health starts with good habits, like eating wholesome foods. And with tower gardens, you can easily grow your own fresh, nutrient-rich food virtually anywhere year-round without soil. So Misty'sGardens.com, have a look at it, check it out, buy it, plant, and like it. Misty'sGardens.com.
Imagine standing barefoot on cushy grass while you use a professional-grade knife to deftly chop fresh vegetables on your organic bamboo cutting board. The team at MyZestiness.com wants to help your family enjoy home cooking like this more often. They do this by offering fun and functional tools that make your time in the kitchen more efficient and enjoyable. MyZestiness.com offers the finest and most interesting kitchen goods and accessories, all backed by their world-class customer service team. Check out their ever-expanding inventory today. Visit MyZestiness.com. That's zesty like spicy, nest like home, MyZestiness.com.
And we are back. Please remember to support our sponsors who make all these wonderful Freedomizer programs possible. Gotta swallow my cookie. I finally found Hydrox cookies. Oreo has nothing on Hydrox. Well, maybe Hydrox should have a double frosting version, but frankly, next to Hydrox, Oreos taste like Crisco. Hydrox has no corn syrup. How about that? And the frosting actually tastes good. It isn't just fat and sugar. Okay, we are on chapter 16 of 2 Samuel, where David has gone into exile in fear of his son Absalom, who has turned the people of Israel against his father David. And David is climbing up the Mount of Olives, Mount Olivet, which will figure in some stories in the life of Jesus, by the way. Very much in similar ways. Chapter 16, verse 1. When David had passed a little beyond the summit, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of donkeys saddled, bearing 200 loaves of bread and 100 bunches of raisins. Now remember, folks, when the Bible says raisins, it means grapes. In many parts of Europe, raisin still means grape. Okay, 200 loaves of bread, 100 bunches of raisins, 100 summer fruits, and a skin of wine. And the king said to Ziba, Why have you brought these? Ziba answered, the donkeys are for the king's household to ride in, to ride on, the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine for those who faint in the wilderness to drink. And the king said, and where is your master's son? Ziba said to the king, behold, he remains in Jerusalem, for he said, today the house of Israel will give me back the kingdom of my father. Then the king said to Ziba, behold, all that belonged to Mephibosheth is now yours. And Ziba said, I pay homage. Let me ever find favor in your sight, my lord the king. Why did I close that book? Oh dear, I need some scotch tape and I need it fast. I've torn a page in my Bible. 2 Samuel chapter 16. Come on. 13, 14, 15, 16. The truth about the truth about Ziba's lies would eventually surface. So see, Ziba is also deceiving David, and David is rather gullible. He believes everything people tell him. He believed the wise woman and granted her wish without further investigation. He believed Absalom about wanting to worship the Lord. I mean, 6 years had passed. Now, where is that torn page? There, here. Here's one. There's two of them. You see these little end thingies, tabs, that help me more easily find the book that I want are sturdier than the actual pages of the book. Bible means book, by the way. So the pages tend to get torn because of the weight of the tabs. One more. Got my tape. David is gullible. He doesn't have the wisdom that his son Solomon will demonstrate. Okay. Got to do both sides to make it sturdy. Come on, evil thing. There, here we go. That's better. Let go of my finger. Had to close the book. Okay. Let's see. Now, who is Ziba? Ziba in 2 Samuel. Ziba was a servant of Saul, then later of Saul's grandson, Mephibosheth. What is the meaning of the name Ziba? It means army or fight or strength. So, Ziba is a servant of the grandson of Saul, the king who wanted to kill David. And he's deceiving David and David falls for it. Now, verse 5. When King David came to Bahurim, there came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. And as he came, he cursed continually, and he threw stones at David and at all the servants of King David, and all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. And Shimei said as he cursed, get out, you man of blood, you worthless man. The Lord has avenged on you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned. And the Lord has given the kingdom into the hand of your son Absalom. See, your evil is on you, for you are a man of blood. Then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over and take off his head. But the king said, what have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah? If he is cursing, because the Lord has said to him, curse David, who then shall say, why have you done so? So you see, David's a fool. He's gullible, but he tries to do the right thing, except when it came to Bathsheba. But that's another story. Verse 11, and David said to Abishai and to all his servants, behold, my own son seeks my life. How much more now may this Benjamite, Saul was of the tribe of Benjamin, a Benjamite. David is the tribe of Judah, a Judahite. And David goes on, leave him alone and let him curse, for the Lord has told him to. It may be that the Lord will look on the wrong done to me, and that the Lord will repay me with good for his cursing today. So David and his men went on the road, while Shimei went along on the hillside opposite him, and cursed as he went, and threw stones at him, and flung dust, D-U-S-T, dust. And the king and all the people who were with him arrived weary at the Jordan, and there he refreshed himself. Now, folks, the Jordan River is a muddy mess today. Maybe it was prettier then. Maybe the water was better. Verse 15. Now Absalom and all the people, the men of Israel, came to Jerusalem, and Ahithophel with him. And when Hushai, the Archite, David's friend, came to Absalom, Hushai said to Absalom, long live the king, long live the king. Excuse me. And Absalom said to Hushai, is this your loyalty to your friend? Why did you not go with your friend? And Hushai said to Absalom, no, for whom the Lord and this people and all the men of Israel have chosen, his will I. Sorry, his I will be, and with him I will remain. And again, whom should I serve? Should it not be his son? As I have served your father, so I will serve you. Then Absalom said to Ahithophel, give your counsel. What shall we do? Ahithophel said to Absalom, go in to your father's concubines, whom he has left to keep the house. And all Israel will hear that you have made yourself a stench to your father, and the hands of all who are with you will be strengthened. So he's supposed to get all his father's concubines pregnant. Whoa. Before this, I haven't seen any mention of Absalom having children, but we shall see. All right. Verse 22. So they pitched a tent for Absalom on the roof, and Absalom went in to his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. Now in those days, the counsel that Ahithophel gave was as if one consulted the word of God. So was all the counsel of Ahithophel esteemed, both by David and by Absalom. So David had trusted this grandson of Saul to advise him. And the first chance he gets, this grandson of Saul aids a rebellion against David. I'm not saying that David didn't ask for it by his perfidy concerning Bathsheba and getting her husband killed so he could have her. But Absalom is still an unsavory character, and so is Ahithophel. And chapter 17, we are making progress, folks. Moreover, Ahithophel said to Absalom, "Let me choose 12,000 men, and I will arise and pursue David tonight. I will come upon him while he is weary and discouraged, and throw him into a panic, and all the people who are with him will flee. I will strike down only the king, and I will bring all the people back to you, as a bride comes home to her husband. You seek the life of only one man, and all the people will be at peace." And the advice seemed right in the eyes of Absalom and all the elders of Israel. Then Absalom said, "Call Hushai the Archite also, and let us hear what he has to say." And when Hushai came to Absalom, Absalom said to him, "Thus has Ahithophel spoken. Shall we do as he says? If not, you speak." Then Hushai said to Absalom, "This time the counsel that Ahithophel has given is not good." Hushai said, "You know that your father and his men are mighty men, and that they are enraged like a bear robbed of her cubs in the field. Besides, your father is expert in war. He will not spend the night with the people. Behold, even now, he has hidden himself in one of the pits or in some other place. And as soon as some of the people fall at the first attack, whoever hears it will say, 'There has been a slaughter among the people who follow Absalom.' Then even the valiant man, whose heart is like the heart of a lion, will utterly melt with fear. For all Israel knows that your father is a mighty man, and that those who are with him are valiant men. But my counsel is that all Israel be gathered to you, from Dan to Beersheba, as the sand by the sea for multitude, and that you go to battle in person. So we shall come upon him in some place where he is to be found, and we shall light upon him as the dew falls on the ground, and of him and all the men with him not one will be left. If he withdraws into a city, then all Israel will bring ropes to that city, and we shall drag it into the valley until not even a pebble is to be found there." And Absalom and all the men of Israel said, "The counsel of Hushai the Archite is better than the counsel of Ahithophel, for the Lord has ordained to defeat the good counsel of Ahithophel, so that the Lord might bring harm upon Absalom. Huh. Okay. Then Hushai said to Zadok and Abiathar the priests, thus and so did Ahithophel counsel Absalom and the elders of Israel, and thus and so have I counseled. Now therefore send quickly and tell David, do not stay tonight. Oh, sorry, got a sneeze. Hang on. Oh, sorry. It's the crazy spring pollen. And now therefore send quickly and tell David, do not stay tonight at the fords of the wilderness, but by all means pass over, lest the king and all the people who are with him be swallowed up. Now Jonathan and Ahimaaz were waiting at En Rogel. A female servant was to go and tell him, and they were to go and tell King David, for they were not to be seen entering the city. But a young man saw them and told Absalom. So both of them went away quickly and came to the house of a man at Bahurim, who had a well in his courtyard, and they went down into it. And the woman took and spread a covering over the well's mouth and scattered grain on it, and nothing was known of it. When Absalom's servants came to the woman at the house, they said, where are Ahimaaz and Jonathan? And the woman said to them, they have gone over the brook of water. And when they had sought and could not find them, they returned to Jerusalem. After they had gone, the men came up out of the well and went and told King David. They said to David, arise and go quickly over the water, for thus and so has Ahithophel counseled against you. Then David arose and all the people who were with him, and they crossed the Jordan. By daybreak, not one was left who had not crossed the Jordan. When Ahithophel saw that his counsel was not followed, he saddled his donkey and went off home to his own city. He set his house in order and hanged himself, and he died and was buried in the tomb of his father. Boy, he really was depressed by his loss of status, huh? That is a rather extreme reaction. Verse 24, then David came to Mahanaim, and Absalom crossed the Jordan with all the men of Israel. Now Absalom had set Amasa over the army instead of Joab. Amasa was the son of a man named Ithra, the Ishmaelite, who had married Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, sister of Zeruiah, Joab's mother. That's complicated. So basically, Amasa is a cousin to Joab. And Amasa's father is an Ishmaelite. In other words, not an Israelite. I guess Absalom doesn't trust Joab. Or did Joab go with David, no. Verse 27, when David came to Mahanaim, Shobi, the son of Nahash from Rabbah of the Ammonites, and Machir, the son of Amiel from Lodabar, and Barzillai, the Gileadite from Rogelim, brought beds, basins and earthen vessels, wheat, barley, flour, parched grain, beans and lentils, honey and curds, and sheep and cheese from the herd, for David and the people with him to eat. For they said, the people are hungry and weary and thirsty in the wilderness. Wow, according to the notes here, 1725, Amasa might actually be an Israelite and not an Ishmaelite. Let's see. Anyway, that's interesting. Anyway, we are about to enter the thick of it in chapter 18. Then David mustered the men who were with him and set over them commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds. And David sent out the army, one third under the command of Joab. So Joab did go with David. One third under the command of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and one third under the command of Ittai the Gittite. Say that six times fast. And the king said to the men, I myself will also go. But the men said, you shall not go out, for if we flee, they will not care about us. If half of us die, they will not care about us. But you are worth 10,000 of us. Therefore, it is better that you send us help from the city. The king said to them, whatever seems best to you, I will do. So at least David is smart enough to take good advice. Back to the text. So the king stood at the side of the gate while all the army marched out by hundreds and by thousands. And the king ordered Joab and Abishai and Ittai, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. So he doesn't want his son Absalom killed despite the treachery. Back to the text. And all the people heard when the king gave orders to all the commanders about Absalom. So the army went out into the field against Israel. That must be hard, doing battle against his own son and his own people. Okay, verse 6. So the army went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was fought in the forest of Ephraim. And the men of Israel were defeated there by the servants of David. And the loss there was great on that day, 20,000 men. The battle spread over the face of all the country, and the forest devoured more people that day than the sword. I wonder if that means they fled into the forest and never came back. And this is a good place to leave you with a cliffhanger. So we'll hear from our wonderful sponsors. And don't go away. We'll be right back with the rest of the story.
Are you looking for a new place to shop, eat, and save? Are you sick of paying full price? Would you like to save money at the places you enjoy most? Well, here's a popular savings book that is full of coupons catered to your local area. It's called Save Around. This book is full of exclusive discounts to help you save money around your town. Yes, that's Save Around. You will save money at restaurants, department stores, cars, even flowers. When I take my family out, there are seven of us. The average meal was about $110 to $140. Last time I took them out, and I'm holding a copy of the receipt right here, The check originally was $120. With the Save Around book, our meal cost $82 at a place we go to quite often. Who knew? And there are a few places we found that we are going to check out. View the books in your area before you buy. Go to freedomizerradio.com or barefootislegal.org. Just click on your city, and within a few days, you will be saving money around town with your new Save Around book.
In this digital society, making connections is quickly becoming a lost art form. Yet, if you are a small business owner, building your network is the only way you can get ahead. Can these skills be learned? You bet they can. Read Nose to Nose Networking, No Nonsense In-Person Networking Tips from a Master. Who's the master? Well, who better to teach networking and friend-building skills than a golden retriever? The author, Melanie Hope, takes the antics of Abigail and translates them into the human experience. Through Abby, you will learn how to set your intention, build a network, and get into and out of conversations with grace. If you love the Dog Abby segments on Counterculture Wise Radio, you will love Nose to Nose Networking even more. Find it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble in hard copy, Kindle, and Nook. Visit CountercultureWise.com for direct links. Imagine standing barefoot on cushy grass while you use a professional-grade knife to deftly chop fresh vegetables on your organic bamboo cutting board. The team at MyZestiness.com wants to help your family enjoy home cooking like this more often. They do this by offering fun and functional tools that make your time in the kitchen more efficient and enjoyable. MyZestiness.com offers the finest and most interesting kitchen goods and accessories, all backed by their world-class customer service team. Check out their ever-expanding inventory today. Visit MyZestiness.com. That's zesty like spicy, nest like home. MyZestiness.com.
And we are almost back with the rest of the story. My sinuses are not cooperating, so hang on just a second here. Well, a few seconds. Come on, evil Kleenex. Actually, I use napkins. They hold up better and longer. So we'll start again at verse 6 in chapter 18 of 2 Samuel, the war between King David and his son, his rebellious son, Absalom. So the army went out into the field against Israel, and the battle was fought in the forest of Ephraim, and the men of Israel were defeated there by the servants of David, and the loss there was great on that day, 20,000 men. The battle spread over the face of all the country, and the forest devoured more people that day than the sword. And Absalom happened to meet the servants of David. Absalom was riding on his mule, and the mule went under the thick branches of a great oak, and his head caught fast in the oak, and he was suspended between heaven and earth, while the mule that was under him went on. And a certain man saw it and told Joab, "Behold, I saw Absalom hanging in an oak." Joab said to the man who told him, "What, you saw him? Why then did you not strike him there to the ground? I would have been glad to give you 10 pieces of silver and a belt." But the man said to Joab, "Even if I felt in my hand the weight of 1,000 pieces of silver, I would not reach out my hand against the king's son, for in our hearing the king commanded you and Abishai and Ittai, for my sake protect the young man Absalom. On the other hand, if I had dealt treacherously against his life, and there is nothing hidden from the king, then you yourself would have stood aloof. Joab said, I will not waste time like this with you. He took 3 javelins in his hand and thrust them into the heart of Absalom while he was still alive in the oak. And 10 young men, Joab's armor bearers, surrounded Absalom and struck him and killed him. Then Joab blew the trumpet, and the troops came back from pursuing Israel, for Joab restrained them. And they took Absalom and threw him into a great pit in the forest, and raised over him a very great heap of stones. And all Israel fled, every one to his own home. Now Absalom in his lifetime had taken and set up for himself the pillar that is in the king's valley. For he said, I have no son to keep my name in remembrance. He called the pillar after his own name, and it is called Absalom's monument to this day. So Joab isn't following orders. He sees Absalom as a threat, and he kills him against David's explicit orders. Not good. Not good at all. Verse 19. Then Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said, let me run and carry news to the king that the Lord has delivered him from the hand of his enemies. And Joab said to him, you are not to carry news today. You may carry news another day, but today you shall carry no news because the king's son is dead. Then Joab said to the Cushite, go, tell the king what you have seen. The Cushite bowed before Joab and ran. So that's weird. Joab's choosing a different messenger. Verse 22. Then Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, said again to Joab, come what may, let me also run after the Cushite. And Joab said, why will you run, my son, seeing that you will have no reward for the news? Come what may, he said, I will run. So he said to him, run. Then Ahimaaz ran by the way of the plain and outran the Cushite. Now David was sitting between the two gates, and the watchman went up to the roof of the gate by the wall, and when he lifted up his eyes and looked, he saw a man running alone. The watchman called out and told the king, and the king said, if he is alone, there is news in his mouth. And he drew nearer and nearer. The watchman saw another man running, and the watchman called to the gate and said, see, another man running alone. The king said, he also brings news. The watchman said, I think the running of the first is like the running of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. And the king said, he is a good man and comes with good news. Then Ahimaaz cried out to the king, all is well. And he bowed before the king with his face to the earth and said, blessed be the Lord your God, who has delivered up the men who raised their hand against my lord the king. And the king said, is it well with the young man Absalom? Ahimaaz answered, when Joab sent the king's servant, your servant, I saw a great commotion, but I do not know what it was. And the king said, turn aside and stand here. So he turned aside and stood still. And behold, the Cushite came. And the Cushite said, good news for my lord the king. For the Lord has delivered you this day from the hand of all who rose up against you. The king said to the Cushite, is it well with the young man Absalom? And the Cushite answered, may the enemies of my lord the king and all who rise up against you for evil be like that young man. And the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, he said, O, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would I had died instead of you, O Absalom, my son. And that, folks, the end of chapter 18 in 2 Samuel is where one of my favorite authors, William Faulkner, got the title for his book, Absalom, Absalom. But David is once again being foolish, and Joab tells him so in chapter 19. Assuming my voice will hold up for another chapter. So let's hear about some of the other wonderful programs on Freedomizer Radio before we get started on chapter 19. We have all kinds of wonderful programming on various topics, so let's find out a little right here.
Come join us as we peel away the layers of the unseen, unknown, and uncharted. And we hope you tune in late night, 9 p.m. Pacific time, to get ready to find a clarity after dark.
Greetings and salutations, Freedomizer listeners. This is Maximilian von Riegelbeezer inviting you and yours to listen to me and mine. Join me, my sisters Abby and Fritzy, and my weekly guests, my father Jim and Mumsy Melanie, for Counterculture Wise.
Max, it's not your show.
And we're not your guests, Max. We're the hosts. You may want to rein it in a little bit, buddy. Very well. Tune in for Counterculture Wise every Sunday night at 6 p.m. on freedomizerradio.com. If you ask me, though, it should be called Counterculture Max.
Solutions to Delusions. How do you do this? Well, join me every Friday night on the Delusion Solution Radio Show, from 6 to 9 p.m. Central Standard Time and 9 to 12 midnight Eastern Time, right here on the Freedomizer Network, where we will be discussing and discerning the times by making sense of current events and bringing to light much-needed topics. Our call-in number is 347-324-3704 to listen in. Watching with your ears and listen with your eyes. I'm your host, Tara Dawn, and I'll see you there.
Hey, Freedomist, join me, Proof Negative, weeknights, 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific, as we fight the New World Order together, right here on Freedomizer Radio, your exclusive home of the Proof Negative Show.
And we are back for another chapter in 2 Samuel, chapter 19. It was told Joab, behold, the king is weeping and mourning for Absalom. So the victory that day was turned into mourning for all the people. For the people heard that day, the king is grieving for his son. And the people stole into the city that day as people steal in who are ashamed when they flee in battle. The king covered his face, and the king cried with a loud voice, O my son Absalom, O Absalom, my son. Then Joab came into the house to the king and said, You have today covered with shame the faces of all your servants who have this day saved your life and the lives of your sons and your daughters and the lives of your wives and your concubines. Because you love those who hate you and hate those who love you. For you have made it clear today that commanders and servants are nothing to you. For today I know that if Absalom were alive and all of us were dead today, then you would be pleased. Now therefore arise, go out and speak kindly to your servants. For I swear by the Lord, if you do not go, not a man will stay with you this night. And this will be worse for you than all the evil that has come upon you from your youth until now. Then the king arose and took his seat in the gate, and the people were all told, behold, the king is sitting in the gate, and all the people came before the king. Now he isn't back in Jerusalem yet. He's in the gate. Now, continuing on verse 8. Now Israel had fled, every man to his own home. And all the people were arguing throughout all the tribes of Israel, saying, the king delivered us from the hand of our enemies and saved us from the hand of the Philistines. And now he has fled out of the land from Absalom. But Absalom, whom we anointed over us, is dead in battle. Now, therefore, why do you say nothing about bringing the king back? And King David sent this message to Zadok and Abiathar the priests. Say to the elders of Judah, why should you be the last to bring the king back to his house when the word of all Israel has come to the king? You are my brothers. You are my bone and my flesh. Why then should you be the last to bring back the king? And say to Amasa, are you not my bone and my flesh? God do so to me and more also, if you are not commander of my army from now on in place of Joab. So that's weird. He's demoting Joab. Verse 14. And he swayed the heart of all the men of Judah as one man, so that they sent word to the king, return, both you and all your servants. So the king came back to the Jordan, and Judah came to Gilgal to meet the king and to bring the king over the Jordan. Now, of course, Judah, the man, is long dead, the son of Jacob. This is the whole tribe of Judah came to bring him home to Jerusalem. Verse 16, and Shimei, the son of Gera, the Benjamite, from Bahurim, hurried to come down with the men of Judah to meet King David, and with him were 1,000 men from Benjamin. And Ziba, the servant of the house of Saul, with his 15 sons and his 20 servants, rushed down to the Jordan before the king. And they crossed the ford to bring over the king's household and to do his pleasure. Now remember, folks, Ziba was deceiving David. Let's see what happens now. Back to the text. And Shimei, the son of Gera, fell down before the king as he was about to cross the Jordan and said to the king, let not my lord hold me guilty, or remember how your servant did wrong on the day my lord the king left Jerusalem. Do not let the king take it to heart. For your servant knows that I have sinned. Therefore, behold, I have come this day, the first of all the house of Joseph, to come down to meet my lord the king. Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, answered, shall not Shimei be put to death for this, because he cursed the Lord's anointed? Remember, he was cursing David and throwing rocks at him? Verse 22, but David said, what have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah, that you should this day be as an adversary to me. Shall anyone be put to death in Israel this day? For do I not know that I am this day king over Israel? And the king said to Shimei, you shall not die. And the king gave him his oath. So David's forgiving everyone. He's actually quite a generous king in most cases. Verse 24, and Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king. Actually, he's a grandson, but okay. He had neither taken care of his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he came back in safety. And when he came to Jerusalem to meet the king said to him, why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth? He answered, my lord, O king, my servant deceived me. For your servant said to him, I will saddle a donkey for myself, that I may ride on it and go with the king. For your servant is lame. He has slandered your servant to my lord the king. But my lord the king is like the angel of God. Do therefore what seems good to you. He's got a similar name to can't even say the name without going back to find it. The guy who hanged himself. Let's go back. And see when Ahithophel is the guy who hanged himself. Because Absalom wouldn't follow his advice. And then Mephibosheth. Here we go. So we'll start over at verse 24. And Mephibosheth, the son of Saul, came down to meet the king. Oh, yeah, he's the son of Saul who is lame, the one surviving son whose feet are deformed so he can't walk. He had neither taken care of his feet, nor trimmed his beard, nor washed his clothes from the day the king departed until the day he came back in safety. And when he came to Jerusalem to meet the king said to him, why did you not go with me, Mephibosheth? He answered, my lord, O king, my servant deceived me. For your servant said to him, I will saddle a donkey for myself, that I may ride on it and go with the king, for your servant is lame. He has slandered your servant to my lord the king, but my lord the king is like the angel of God. Do therefore what seems good to you. For all my father's house were but men doomed to death before my lord the king, but you set your servant among those who eat at your table. What further right have I, then, to cry to the king? And the king said to him, why speak any more of your affairs? I have decided, you and Ziba shall divide the land. And Mephibosheth said to the king, oh, let him take it all, since my lord the king has come safely home. So Ziba, the deceiver, is getting quite a reward here. 31. Now Barzillai the Gileadite had come down from Rogelim, and he went on with the king to the Jordan to escort him over the Jordan. Barzillai was a very aged man, 80 years old. He had provided the king with food while he stayed at Mahanaim, for he was a very wealthy man. And the king said to Barzillai, come over with me, and I will provide for you with me in Jerusalem. But Barzillai said to the king, how many years have I still to live that I should go up with the king to Jerusalem? I am this day 80 years old. Can I discern what is pleasant and what is not? Can your servant taste what he eats or what he drinks? Can I still listen to the voice of singing men and singing women? Why then should your servant be an added burden to my lord the king? Your servant will go a little way over the Jordan with the king. Why should the king repay me with such a reward? Please let your servant return that I may die in my own city, near the grave of my father and my mother. But here is your servant Chimham. Let him go over with my lord the king and do for him whatever seems good to you. And the king answered, Chimham shall go over with me, and I will do for him whatever seems good to you, and all that you desire of me I will do for you. Then all the people went over the Jordan, and the king went over, and the king kissed Barzillai and blessed him, and he returned to his own home. The king went on to Gilgal, and Chimham went on with him. All the people of Judah and also half the people of Israel brought the king on his way. Then all the men of Israel came to the king and said to the king, Why have our brothers, the men of Judah, stolen you away and brought the king and his household over the Jordan and all David's men with him? I don't know what that means. All the men of Judah answered the men of Israel, Because the king is our close relative. Why then are you angry over this matter? Have we eaten at all at the king's expense, or has he given us any gift? And the men of Israel answered the men of Judah, We have 10 shares in the king, and in David also we have more than you. Why then did you despise us? Were we not the first to speak of bringing back our king? But the words of the men of Judah were fiercer than the words of the men of Israel. Now see, Israel here refers to the 10 tribes. That's why they have 10 shares in the king. The Levites, of course, are the priests. And the Judahites, of course, are the kings. So it's the other 10 tribes, and that's primarily the two largest tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh, from the two sons of Joseph. Dan out because Dan wouldn't fight. They stayed in their ships instead of taking the land from the invaders who had settled there. Okay. I think we can get through chapter 20. I'm just kind of wondering how many chapters there are in 2 Samuel. I don't remember, so I'm going to look it up. It comes right before the first book of Kings. Okay, there's 24 chapters. And I'm running out of voice here, but you know what? There will be a rebellion, of which we will speak next week. A rebellion among the 10 tribes. We'll save that one for next week. Because my voice just won't hold up any longer. But you know what? This episode will be archived for later listening within about 24 hours. So if you missed any portion of it, you'll be able to listen again on Blog Talk Radio, where we where we podcast, I guess you call it, or broadcast all of our shows on Freedomizer Radio. My voice is about gone, guys, so I will let you go with our favorite clip from our favorite author, Philip K. Dick, and we'll be back next time, same bat time, same bat station. See you then.
The subject of this speech is a topic which has been discovered recently and which may not exist at all. I may be talking about something that does not exist. Therefore, I'm free to say everything or nothing. I, in my stories and novels, often write about counterfeit worlds, semi-real worlds, as well as deranged private worlds, inhabited often by just one person, while meantime the other characters either remain in their own worlds throughout or are somehow drawn into one of the peculiar ones. This theme occurs in the corpus of my 27 years of writing. At no time did I have a theoretical or conscious explanation for my preoccupation with these pluriform pseudo-worlds, but now I think I understand. What I was sensing was the manifold of partially actualized realities lying tangent to what evidently is the most actualized one, the one which the majority of us, by consensus gentium, agree on. Later that day, back home again, but still deeply under the influence of the sodium pentothal, I had a short, acute flash of recovered memory. Then, in mid-March, a month later, the total body of memories, intact and entire, began to return. You are free to believe me or to disbelieve, but please take my word on it that I am not joking. This is very serious, a matter of importance. At that time, I had no idea what I was seeing. It resembled nothing that I had ever heard described. It resembled plasmic energy. It had colors. It moved fast. It collected and then dispersed. But what it was, what he was, I am not sure even now. In other words, it's a common theme in my writing that a dark-haired girl shows up at the door of the protagonist and tells him that his world is delusional, that there's something false about it. Well, this did finally happen to me. I even knew that her hair would be black. I had an actual complete sense of what she would look like and what she would say. She did appear. She was a total stranger, and she did inform me of this fact, that some of my fictional works were in a literal sense true. I wrote out these dreams in novel after novel, story after story. To name two in which this prior ugly present obtained most clearly, I cite The Man in the High Castle and my 1974 novel about the U.S. as a police state called Flow My Tears, The Policeman Said. I'm going to be very candid with you. I wrote both novels based on fragmentary residual memories of such a horrid slave state world. People claim to remember past lives. I claim to remember a different, very different present life. I know of no one who has ever made this claim before, but I rather suspect that my experience is not unique. What perhaps is unique is the fact that I am willing to talk about it. We are living in a computer-programmed reality, and the only clue we have to it is when some variable is changed and some alteration in our reality occurs. We would have the overwhelming impression that we were reliving the present, deja vu, perhaps in precisely the same way, hearing the same words, saying the same words. I submit that these impressions are valid and significant, and I will even say this: such an impression is a clue that at some past time point, a variable was changed, reprogrammed, as it were, and that because of this, an alternative world branched off.
Okay, folks, remember, in about 90 minutes, a little less than that, about 80 minutes, Counterculture Wise will come on with your hosts Melanie and Jim, plus dog Abby and Max the cat. So be sure to tune in. Thank you all for listening.